Hare Krishna, everyone. I hope you're having an amazing Sunday today. My name is Gopigita Schomaker, and I am so privileged to be the Vice Principal of TKG Academy, the very first school established by Srila Prabhupada. And here we are live from the ISKCON GBC Strategic Planning Team. Please do check out their Facebook page, facebook.com/GBCSPT, where you'll get all kinds of information, important information during COVID about all kinds of events and pertinent things in ISKCON. So today, we have the real honor of having His Holiness Bir Krishna Maharaj with us on this show. And his biography is very long. He has many, many accomplishments. He's an author, he's a world traveler, a spiritual master, and a very early disciple of His Holiness, of Srila Prabhupada. But more important for me personally is that he single-handedly raised me with inside of his community of New Goloka, and here he is, and my sister, and a whole group of us youth while we were in our most precarious teenage years with his Bhagavatam classes and his love. Hare Krishna Maharaj, so good to have you with us.
Hare Krishna Gopi Keith, it's good to see you. So let's offer our respects to Prabhupada first. You know, Om Maganat, Nirandasha, Garanjana, Shalakaya, Chakshur, Miditam, Yena Tuzmai, Shigurve Namaha. We offer our respects to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, so kindly open our eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while we were blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So, it's good to see you.
Yes.
And we're going to be talking about how to raise children.
Yes, raising children empathically. So, Bikish Maharaj, you know, it's like, it's really, really nice seeing you. It brings me back to my childhood when I was in your Bhagavatam classes and when all of us would sit, basically the entire Bhagavatam class would be us rolling on the ground full of laughter. And I remember the days would start at Mangalarti time. You would be there just very quietly, very steadily, every single day chanting the holy name. And it really brought so many of us. And I see a few of my friends from our childhood have also joined. If you are here and you remember those times, please do comment below. Please ask your questions below. And you actually practiced raising children empathically. You created such a nurturing environment for all of us. So my first, I guess, question to you would be like, how did you know to do that? What in those days, swamis and gurus generally are in the renounced stage. They are separated from children. So what is your background with working with children?
Well, scientific studies, we're going to start with the scientific studies.
Sure.
I've shown that 87% of adults used to be children. Are you aware of that? And maybe a higher number, but at least 87%. So in my particular case, I was one of the 87%, and I used to be a child.
You have experience.
Yeah, I have a lot of experience. And I have experience of a childhood in which my mother, God bless her, and I love her very much, she tried to raise me in a way to turn me into her little clone.
Mm.
So I saw what shouldn't do in raising children in Krishna consciousness. And so I just did the opposite, knowing that I have a very strong need for autonomy. So I projected that need upon the children. And then based upon my understanding of children, how I felt when I was a child, which I remember very well, even though it was 200 years ago. Yeah, a long time. follow the proper diet and you remain young for a long time. So even though it was a long time ago, I just understood. I did something in empathy that's really important. Now, joking aside, I did some role-playing internally with the children. I put myself in their situation, and I tried to see how they were seeing things, how you were seeing things, and your sister were seeing things, and the other children were seeing things. And I acted in such a way with you all as you would have liked to be encouraged in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so interesting because I remember even little things, like we would be outside the temple room and you would have your plate of maha sweets. And in those days, and I guess every time, women are not supposed to stand too close to the maharajas. Well, we were like 13 or 12, the sweets and joke around with us. And I remember the like senior or a few devotees would be like, tisk, tisk, like this isn't appropriate because they're women. We were 12 years old, but you treated us as if we were just your children, like just like a loving father, and you made it like a happy environment instead of like a controlling, rigid morning program environment that kids wouldn't want to be a part of.
Yeah, so I tried to see things from the perspective of yourselves and what types of relationships you would like to have. It was very easy, and I understood. Actually, the first principle in raising children, so we're talking about raising children, is we try to understand what we want them to be in the future. Mm. And Prabhupada's desire was that we would all be independently thoughtful devotees, you know, following the rules and regulations, but choosing to do so out of our own desires, not because of threats, not because of rewards. And if you want, I can get further into that subject matter.
Mm, yes, absolutely. Okay, so independently thoughtful, and that the most important thing is to look at the end goal. And that's also one of Stephen Covey's principles, Maharaj, where I'm studying that right now with the youth bhakti courses that I'm doing. It's so interesting that you say that the first most important thing for everybody, and I'm just repeating this for all of you here, is to be independently thoughtful. Raise your children to be independently thoughtful. And when you look at that end goal, and I love how you said that you're looking at their at the world through their eyes, Maharaj. We were just in Mayapur with you this year, and my boys had a chance to spend some time with you. And the thing I noticed was, it was so interesting for me to watch you work with them and talk to them. You didn't spend any time talking about like Rupa Goswami's, Nathan Goswami's scriptures. You immediately went to what they're interested. They were talking about drones, technology. You immediately started discussing technological things with them. I learned so much from that encounter. So you've also written a book on this, Realizing Our Empathic Nature.
Listen, I'm not trying to sell books.
Connected to Krishna is such a good book. I take a look at it every now and then. I love your book and your whole section on children. Can you talk to us a little bit about what do you mean by control? Most of us raise our children with an environment of control, which is the opposite to what you're saying, independently thoughtful.
Well, okay.
Explain that a little bit to us.
This is a long subject matter, but control means... we want the children to be good in our own eyes. So good for a devotee. I mean, it basically depends on the child's age. But good for a devotee generally means, and I'm speaking facetiously, jokingly right now, good for a devotee means that a little baby will keep his mouth shut unless talked to. That's for a little baby. And good, later on, means they'll be like little tiny Pallad Maharajas. Our expectations for the children will be that they will be completely disinterested in eating and sleeping and playing, and their only desire will be to chant the Lord's holy names because they're Nityasiddha devotees. So the problem with that is that expectation we have for our children, this is in ISKCON-wide, I would say problem, becomes a demand on the children. And the problem with a demand, when you make a demand on children, is they rebel. The problem with the demand, if you make a demand on me, I'm going to rebel too. If you say, Maharaj, it's time to eat, sit down and eat your prasadam, I will say, forget it, Gopi.
Oh, my God.
Shot him. Because it's a strong, strong thing with the children. And with adults, too. You know, we're independently thoughtful. That was the question you asked. Yeah. So independent thoughtful means we have a need for autonomy to express ourselves and be ourselves. And so how do you facilitate Krishna or children being Krishna conscious, understanding that? Mm. And that's very difficult. So another way we control children, sorry if I'm going on a little long about this.
No, this is so important.
Okay. Another method that we use in ISKCON and in religious societies, incidentally, religious societies, not just ISKCON, have a problem because most people in religious societies are less empathic than the people in general in society. And the reason
is... interesting. Wow. Yeah. Most people in religious societies are less empathic when you would think that they would be, it's supposed to be more connected to the heart.
Well, the reason for that is because we have so many rules and regulations and we're very authoritative.
Mm.
That's a problem. See, whoops, what happened with my screen? Okay. So the problem with being very authoritative is that if we're authoritative and we have the authority and the like Prabhupada did, there's no problem.
Okay.
But we in this guy, and I know this may really rub people the wrong way, we have a lot of people who are trying to imitate Prabhupada externally without the purity. Mm-hmm. And when they do that, then it really causes people to rebel and go in the opposite direction. And that's the problem we had with children. So the methodologies that we are using right now are either you're supposed to do it, you know, it's like an expectation, a force, which causes rebellion, or we may use two other methodologies, which is reward and punishment.
Yes.
Yeah, so like if you don't dance in Mangalarti, you are not going to get the Mahasweets.
Yeah.
And I remember it sometimes in the early days, not that anymore, that if the children didn't dance in Mangalarti, the teacher would go up to them and say, dance, dance. And it's like one of those old Western movies where you have the cowboys and Indians, you know, the cowboy would pull out his gun and point it at the other cowboy's feet and say, dance, partner, dance.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so everything you're saying is so packed full of information. Each of these topics could be, and, you know, as you show with your book, and as we're doing also at our school, each of these topics are so important. So let me, if it's okay, break it down a little bit.
Yeah, first thing, sure.
What was that?
Sure, whatever you want.
Yeah, so the first thing you were saying was that we tend to demand that our children follow our instructions. And so most people, like, that's the culture they were raised in, and they have no idea of another way, like you said, to make it force a child to sit down and eat. If you tell, you know, a child to sit and eat, then someone like you who wanted to be independently thoughtful when you were younger, you would rebel and do the opposite. And so it's like this idea of control. What you're speaking against is control. And I love that you're saying this, Srila Gurudeva. It's so important. It's been a very personal need of ours, our group of teachers, my husband, and those of us who were raised in Krishna consciousness. We look around today and there are so few of our peers still interested in or even practicing Krishna consciousness that this kind of environment of control and demanding related to devotional service has actually created like very dangerous effects where people like shy away from. You know, I have very dear friends who will not pick up their beads. They love Krishna, but because they were forced so intensely to chant japa when they were younger, that they will not touch their beads. And so this that you're saying is so important for anybody who's raising children, either educating them or working with them. And so what is an alternative to the demand and the control? And then after that, I'd love to go more into this reward and punishment dichotomy that you're discussing.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about punishment. But let's talk about the alternative first, because it's your show, not mine.
I don't want to get in trouble.
No, that's
whatever
your,
you want to think
show.
About.
So the alternative is what's called intrinsic motivation.
Okay.
So what I was first talking about is extrinsic motivation. And we'll talk about reward and punishment in a second, which is another type. So intrinsic is to help the children. Incidentally, children are living entities, in case you hadn't figured that out. And they do make plans, and they do have desires, and they do have needs. And the needs are, you know, basic needs. Like some of the stuff I'm getting is from Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Chaitanya Shikshamrita. where he talks about we all have human needs. Like, I have a need for air. You know, I may be chanting Hare Krishna, but I still have to breathe. I still have to eat. I still have to sleep. I have to do all these other things. I am not completely transcendental like Rupa Goswami right now. So children are not little Rupa Goswamis. They need to eat, sleep, play, have fun, and be human beings. So we're actually human beings, too, or in human bodies. So, in other words, to help the children understand what their basic needs are. It's a very simple thing. Like, if a child is crying, apart from Krishna consciousness, let's say he's crying, he's not crying to drive you crazy. Some parents think like that, that my child's crying because he's just torturing me. He hates me. No, the child is crying because the child wants to sleep. The child's uncomfortable. There's a basic need the child has. So our business is to facilitate the needs of the children. Really essential. Now, the basic needs, of course, food, air, light, water, friendship, play. Play is a need. I hate to tell you that, you know, even though we're in Krishna consciousness, we're at have a need of play. Just like, I mean, just like every day I'm playing. Yesterday, the day before, I go swimming, which is play, it's fun, Vaishnava sport. And so then ultimately, the children have a need for connecting with Krishna, just like you and I do. But their basic needs have to be met first. If you're hungry, you're not going to want to connect with Krishna, if you're a child, that is. Or if you're feeling threatened, you're not going to want to connect with Krishna. So you help the child understand. That's basically what we're talking about with empathic communication. Help the child understand their basic needs. We'll let you ask another question now.
Wow, okay. So you're saying that we have to identify their needs, and we have to, when they are struggling with something or they're having an issue with something, instead of assuming the negative, assuming yes. that they're out to get you, as some of us may tend to do, or assuming that you're something's wrong with you, just to identify that they have a need that's not being met, and I need to identify what that need is.
Yes. You all need right, to identify. So then, let me get into how to identify the need. Okay, that's really okay. important. Yeah. How to identify the need means to take the time. We always want to do things very efficiently, unfortunately. You know, we can say, you are needy. But that's not that's just a diagnosis. You know, you're just like, and it really disconnects us from the person. But we talk to, you know, little Tommy, let's say, don't give him a spiritual name right now. But Tommy, you know, we can guess, you know, are you feeling upset because you're hungry or because, you know, you need some love? I mean, just simple stuff like that. So you guess the need. You connect with the person. I mean, the problem is that we don't really connect with people understanding their needs. We pass judgments on them quite easily. And we need to do that with adults too, obviously. And it's very difficult to find, as we find in Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamrita, that devotees are supposed to be engaged in the six loving exchanges. One of them is Guhyam Akyati Prichati.
Yeah.
Revealing the mind and confidence. And how many people do we have that want to hear what we have to say in confidence? I remember a funny story is when I was a young brahmachari, I was traveling with a sannyasi, and I said, can I reveal my mind to you? And he said, there's nothing of worth in your mind.
Hare Krishna. Oh my goodness. So hardcore. So we have so many here with us. Thank you so much for joining. We're here with His Holiness Sri Krishna Maharaj, who is an expert in raising children just from his own like heart. He's understood how to connect with them, and he said it's because he is a child. And so many of you are here with us. I see Krishna and Champlika and Mother Lakshmi Priya, Dilip Patel, Bhakta Obed. Please do hit that share button right now. I'm here on behalf of the ISKCON GBC strategic planning team. We have a question here that ties right into what you're saying, Maharaj. It's how do we identify the child's emotional needs, from Paramita Singh?
Well, it also depends on how old the child is. I mean, if the child's not able to talk, then we empathize with the child, not necessarily through talking with the child. Most empathy and compassion is done through body language. That's why I'm so happy we're talking here, where we have a video and sound and everything like that, because when you just have words, you don't really connect with people. But when you have body language and tone of voice, you can connect. So just to show some interest in the child, understanding the child, whatever the child is expressing, whatever you're expressing, whatever anyone is expressing, this holds for adults too, is due to a desire to have some basic need fulfilled, including Krishna consciousness, but usually with a little child, it's some really basic need. So we empathize with them, and if they're older, we take the time. Instead of just saying to the child, this is your need, you know, can you tell me how you're feeling? Okay. What do you need? Or you can guess. And guessing is good, actually, with a child who can speak, because the child will tell you you're wrong. And the child's happy that you've tried to guess, try to understand what he or she needs. Because we need that. The basic need I've seen we have in all over, not just Krishna consciousness, is a need for connection. You know, someone who cares enough for us to ask us what we need. You know,
yes, for sure.
You know, how often do I get that? You know, no one asks me that. Because I'm a sannyasi. I'm not supposed to need anything.
Because
if they ask me what I need, I'll probably say, just send some money. So anyway, I'll give them my PayPal address. But that money's not a need. I just want to make that clear. So I hope that answered. Just empathize. You don't really have to solve the problem. Just you're not that you have to fulfill their needs. You empathize your needs. You connect with them. Because the basic need of love and connection is there in every one of us. And it's so hard to find that. And that's what Srila Prabhupada really connected with us. You know,
So when you're saying connect, you mean like hear what they're saying, and then it's easier to encourage their engagement instead of demanding? Like, how does that connect to giving them instructions?
Okay, very good. First of all, the first desire is not to control the kids. You got to really take away your priorities or change your priorities. The first priority is to be connecting to the children. Because if you're trying to control them, you may temporarily control them, but a person convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. And he'll be very rebellious. I'll give you an example of my own wonderful childhood. When I was a child, my mother told me, don't go in this room where I had all the antique furniture. So I behaved while she was around, and as soon as she left the house for a little bit, I was jumping on the antique furniture and treating it like a trampoline. Because it was fun. It's actually fun to not do what your authority says. So the whole idea is don't try to control. But let's say you do need to get the child to go to school. I mean, that's obviously, that's one of your needs that, for the child's welfare.
Yes, so, like most kids.
Yeah, most kids, they need to go to school. So you don't let them stay at home. Actually, even Prabhupada's mother had to hire someone to force Prabhupada to go to school, which is kind of funny. So what you do is you take the time and sit down with the child. What I would do is say, okay, here's school. You have a choice. You can go to school. You could not go to school. However, here's the natural repercussions for not going to school. Not unnatural, not a spanking, not a whatever punishment. But if you don't go to school, then maybe when you grow up, you're going to just be like cleaning houses. Is that really what you want? I mean, it's up to you. You know, I don't want to clean houses. I went to the university and I'm very happy. I became a sannyasi because I went to the university. Well, that's really interesting. I became a sannyasi in spite of going to the university. So you explain the natural results of each course of action. and you explain it in such a way, and then you can explain your own needs. So not, I have a need for you to be happy in life. See, I'm your parent, let's say, hypothetically. I'm your mother, which is very interesting, a saffron-colored mother. But I have a need for you to be happy and to be well-situated and have sufficient shelter in life when you get older. So you express, as a parent, you can express your own needs. Not that I have a need for you to get dressed up right now and get on that bus 5 minutes. So there's a way to facilitate it so the child understands that it's in his or her best interest to act in a particular way. It takes time. We don't want to take the time. We want a quick and easy solution. This is what Prabhupada said. Do it. If you don't do it, you're in Maya. Okay.
This is so important and so, like, wow. Because, first of all, I see a few comments saying that there's an echo coming from me. So I'm trying to figure that out. I'm not so good at the technology. I'm muting a one side. So let me know if the echo has lessened. But what you're saying here is to connect with their reason and with their intellect and, like, really empower them to have. And what's so interesting, Srila Gurudev, is that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Mother Yashoda does this with Krishna when he's eating dirt. She connects with his reason. She doesn't just like throw a demand on him. She asks him, why did you do this? And what is the reason? And don't you know that this will cause suffering to your body or whatever, however she's explaining it. And so I love that you're saying this, that you connect to the reason, you give them a chance to understand the reason for why they need to do that particular course of action and allow them to make the choice to make the better choice. And it's so much better than forcing your children. It's so important. I hope some of you are able to understand this. We have a comment from Atulya Mataji, Atulya Devi Dasi. She's asking, how do we do it? And so I hope that answered your questions, Atulya Devi Dasi. And so moving from here, now this is how you can do, you can encourage your children to engage in specific activities without demanding. What then, how then does extrinsic or intrinsic motivation come into that? And how is that tied to reward and punishment?
Okay, so let's talk about reward and punishment. So I don't know if you ever have gone to, let's say, an aquarium or sea aquarium and seen, like, dolphins or, like, so-and-so's Shamu the killer whale jumping up and doing all sorts of tricks. So animals, unfortunately, are controlled by reward and punishment. In other words, you give the animal a fish if it does its trick properly, and whatever, you don't give the animal the fish if it doesn't do its trick properly. So what that does is that causes the person to function on the basis of being attracted or repulsed by the reward or punishment. For example, all right, let's use my own case. Okay, here's my, but like I said, I was a kid. So here's my example. When I was young, my mother would give me money for doing it, getting an A in school. Pretty good. Like $5. And for getting a B, you know, a little less, a C, nothing, a D, negative. So, you know. So what it didn't teach me to like to study. It taught me to like money.
Wow.
And that's, you know, it taught me to like accounting. That's why I know a lot about accounting at this particular point.
Yeah, so, it definitely had nothing to do with school.
No, it had nothing to do with school. I mean, I did well in school because I wanted money. And another thing, I mean, this is really traumatic now that you're my psychologist here. So when I, God forbid, got a D, I wasn't her son anymore. My son could not get a D. And oh my God. You know, can you imagine how a child feels? You're not my son because you got a D.
Oh, goodness.
Because that was in physical education. It wasn't in academics. So I'd like to have you know. And so then eventually, this was in the old days when you had a report card, you know, no electronics. So I purchased some invisible ink and was able to change my grades back to a higher grade you know, disappearing ink. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, yes.
And so
yes.
I get my mother to sign the report card when it was an A, and then it went turned into a C. Then I took the report card away and took it back to school.
Oh my goodness! What a child you were! Definitely independently thoughtful.
That's how I understand children, because I was definitely rebellious, and my mother was very controlling. Like I said, I love her. She was doing it for the right purpose, but and guilt trips like anything, you know, if you love me, you will do this. I said, oh my God. So if I don't do that, I don't love you. You know, it's just all this, you know, love. Well, children should experience unconditional love. I think that's the most important thing I can present today. Unconditional love, regardless.
Children should experience unconditional love.
Yes.
Oh my goodness, it's so important, especially because our children are associating their childhood with Krishna. And if we mess up, they will stay away from Krishna. And we're ruining their spiritual connections to the Lord if we like are forcing them and controlling them and keep them completely bottled up. They will rebel against the Supreme Lord.
Yes, they're going to rebel against.
It's so important for parents today that are practicing Bhakti Yoga to understand the grave responsibility they have and how they should practice with their children. It's so important. I'm so glad that you've written about this, that you speak about this, that you teach us about this. It's, you know, one of the most important things for us moving into the next 50 years of ISKCON.
You know, basically we have to love the children, and, you know, we're supposed to love everybody, but especially the children. I mean, Prabhupada didn't hate anybody. I mean, it's really important to understand that when Prabhupada would have some discussion with a professor or something and really chastise them, he didn't hate the person. I mean, like you find in the Bible, you know, hate the sin, not the sinner. So Prabhupada, just let me relate my first experience with Prabhupada, which is very interesting, and I was a kid then. I felt that Prabhupada, my first exchange with Prabhupada, here is someone who loves me irregardless or regardless, as the proper word is. Have to get chastised by Mother Ermila for using the wrong words. regardless of who or what I did, here is someone who loves me. And that's Krishna, because the spiritual master is the representative of Krishna. He's the manifest super soul. And so he loves me. You know, I don't have to do anything for him to love me. And therefore, I'm going to do whatever I can do to please him.
So beautiful.
It's a voluntary spirit of service. I don't care. I'm going to do whatever I have to do to please Prabhupada. And, you know, that's been my life because Prabhupada loves me. Simple.
That's so beautiful, Marge. So we have so many of you that are here with us. Please do hit that share button because, as I said, it's really important for parents to hear Marge's message and this message. We've got a few questions. First, I will go to Krishna, if that's okay, Marge. She has said, sometimes I force my kids, then explain the good result to them after. In some cases, they can't imagine the good result until they do the action. Oh, that's a comment.
Well, I should comment on that, right?
Sure.
Actually, Krishna was raised here, so anyway. So I would suggest spending more time, you know, with them, and it requires a lot of time. And when this is an important point too, when you're deciding something in the family as a whole, bring them into the decision-making process. Make them feel like, you know, you have an istogosti with the family and they may have some good suggestions. Treat them, maybe not like an adult, but treat them as a participating member of the community, the family community. And then they will feel more valued and they'll feel more like cooperating. Like Prabhupada said, our love is tested by our cooperation. You know, that's a famous statement. So love and cooperation. So first there has to be love. Because if you use the word cooperate with me, it doesn't mean cooperation. It means listen to what I say, you rascal. You know, it's funny, even in ISKCON amongst adults, we use the thing, you have to cooperate with your authority. But the word cooperate is a two-way word. Cooperate. You know, so at least be consistent in your use of language. Say you have to be obedient to your authority rather than cooperate. I mean, at least be truthful in your language. So there has to be some love there. I mean, in Krishna consciousness, everything is based on love. I mean, we're not getting paid for what we're doing. And, you know, and not getting so much appreciation. Like, no one appreciates me. But anyway, it's basically, you know, why am I doing what I'm doing? For the love of Prabhupada. You know, we tolerate so many things in ISKCON because we love Prabhupada. We want to please Prabhupada. And he loves us. You know, so, and we love Krishna. And Krishna loves us. This is the biggest motivating factor if you love someone.
This is so beautiful. So I just love when you speak about Srila Prabhupada, you just bring him, you make him totally real. Immediately he comes in the mind. But what you're saying is treat your children as a cooperating member, a valuable member of your household. That, and I remember I was, luckily, of course, my kids may say something different, able to do that when they were one or two or five. Everywhere we went together, we asked, I gave them choices. Would you like to do this or would you like to do that? Even now, it's all about engaging them in the decisions. My husband took them along with all of his services, and they were valuable contributing members of the family. Their feelings mattered, their voices mattered, what they thought, what they like. If they didn't want to do something at a certain point, I would put on these dramas and it would be like 3 weeks of all in. And I remember when Reggie was 7 years old, he said, Mommy, it's really stressful when you do dramas. Can we not do it like that? And I remember having to pause and stop and say, oh, wow, it's stressing out my kids the way I'm working on this. Let's figure out a way that it's not stressful for them. So this is so important. Here we have Alexandra Adigopi. She's asking, how do you deal with a disobedient teenager?
Well, I think that the problem right there is disobedient, because you're putting that little label on the teenager. Actually, you got two words that are problems with the disobedient and teenager.
it's like an oxymoron, right?
They both mean the same thing.
Oh, interesting.
The same thing. Okay, I'm going to explain this by talking about children who are 2 years old. You have this saying called the terrible twos. You ever heard of that before?
Yes, it's so unfortunate.
It's so unfortunate. It's actually very fortunate to have terrible twos. The reason is the child is beginning to express itself when it's 2 years, that's interesting, when he or she is 2 years old as an individual, individuating itself or himself.
Yes, and so that's why I say it's unfortunate, because people shouldn't be calling the 2-year-olds terrible.
It's ecstatic. The child is expressing its personality for the first time. Before that, it's just like he is just an extension of the mother, or just like relating to the mother. Now you're an independent personality. Great. So the teenager is expressing her or himself as someone capable of making decisions. So if you actually can empathize with that and appreciate that, then I'm not saying it's a means of controlling. I'm not giving you a means of controlling. Believe me, I'm giving you a means of connecting. As I said before, first priority is to connect with the person. If you connect with the person, things will come out all right. Maybe not the way you wanted. Maybe your son will not become a doctor. That's another story about my mother. She wanted me to be a doctor. So instead, I became a Hare Krishna. And talk about control. This is how I learned how to take care of children. So when I first joined the Krishna Conscious Movement, I got multiple calls from people that my mother was on her deathbed because I joined the Hare Krishna Movement.
Oh, my goodness. And, wow.
Of course, at that point, I was just like a fanatic Hare Krishna. I said, well, she'll take a better body in her next life because she's thinking of me. You know, so, you know, rebellious. So that's one type of control, guilt trips. So ultimately, I mean, now she loves it. I'm a Hare Krishna. Now she's 92 years old. She hasn't died, of course. And she actually said to me the other day, she said, you know what? She said, I have something to reveal to you. This is her speaking. I'm a Hare Krishna.
Oh, wow. That's so sweet, Marge. That's so amazing. I love meeting your mom.
Yeah, she's forgotten everything else about her life. In fact,
that's incredible.
She forgot she was married before. And I said to her mother, you know, I have something to reveal to you. I'm a Hare Krishna too. She said, really? Now we're both Hare Krishnas. So anyway, take the connection with the child first and try to empathize with their needs and see where it takes you. Because if you treat them as a disobedient teenager and you have this like designation label that you're putting on them, they will actually live up to that designation. You know, when you give someone a label, they actually live up to the label, which is interesting.
And so this label of disobedient teenager, so then how would someone who's faced with teenagers who don't comply or don't seem to, like, you're not connected with them, what would you recommend for them to do?
Spend the time talking with them. I mean, how much time do we spend talking with each other or talking to the children and just saying, you know, how do you feel? You know, what's important for you in life? You know, reveal your mind. And in confidence, guyam akyati prichati. In other words, you don't go on the internet the next day and say, you know, my child. I was just looking at the Facebook page of a lady who was really frustrated. She had to homeschool because of the COVID-19 stuff. And she was just like cursing her children out. You know, we don't want a relationship like that. The most important thing is you love people unconditionally, like Srila Prabhupada did. And the children love Prabhupada. They were willing to do anything for Prabhupada. But, you know, unfortunately, we don't always do that. So then the children will decide. I mean, not in every case. I mean, some people may do things that you don't like. I mean, that's life. But it's less likely that they will actually do things you don't like if you are loving and compassionate and empathic with them. We're not giving them means of control. Believe me, I don't want to teach you how to control children or to control adults.
Yes, this is so important. So I hope, Adigopi Devi, that you understood this or heard this. It's unconditional control. I mean, unconditional love. really encouraging that relationship as a mother of teens. I always notice that when I spend time working with the kids on what they're interested in, I go and spend time asking them, what are your interests, taking them on walks, doing things with them. All of a sudden, they're more eager to help me on the chores of the house. They're suddenly so much more interested in what's mommy doing and what's daddy doing and what do we need to do for the household, because they feel valued. They feel valuable that, wow, my parents are ready to put aside their busy days to spend time with us, even in playing video games. I hope that doesn't get me in trouble. Even in checking on, you know, things that they're interested in that I may consider like, oh, I don't know about that. So this is something Gopika here, she's with us. Thank you so much for joining, Gopika. She's working with the ISKCON Ministry of Education for Youth Education, and she's written a whole thing here to check out restorative practices. There are quite a few practices and philosophies that you can look into and delve into in order to learn how to talk to your children. And I definitely request you to check out Maharaj's book, Realizing Our Empathic Nature Connected to Krishna. He has a whole section in there with a lot more details on this.
It's available on Amazon as a Kindle and as a printed book, and I'm not making any profit from it. I'm doing it, you know, just to disseminate knowledge.
Yes, thank you. And so let's see, there are some more questions. If you have any more questions, we're here for another 15 minutes. Let's see. I'm going to just take a look at these questions here. We had one coming in. Oh, here we have Mother Lakshmi Priya. Oh, there's Krishna's comment. I wanted to add that sometimes kids talk to you when you sit near them and show that you're not doing anything else but being there. If they don't try to talk, just be there and they will talk to you. So important. Such a good point.
Yes, extremely, extremely good point. Actually, I want to make one more point real quickly before we take more questions, is that we have to be careful, and this is not so much the empathy type of stuff, but we have to be careful about imposing different extrinsic cultural norms on children when they're growing up in a different society. And I've seen that in some schools before where we have, like, you know, quote, that aren't actually essential Vedic norms, but are like either Indian culture or this culture or that culture. We try to impose something on them when they're in a different culture. And it's really, it strikes them really badly. And they rebel against Krishna consciousness because of that. So we have to understand what is the essence of Krishna consciousness rather than what we call the details. We have to understand the principles and not try to impose, like the cultural items, I mean, like type of dress or bald head or something like that. These things are extrinsic. So the important aspects of Krishna consciousness are, you know, the Shastras, Srila Prabhupada, and then automatically whatever is essential extrinsically, they will follow. But we have to be able to distinguish between the details and the principles of Krishna consciousness when dealing with children. Otherwise, it'll appear very, very ritualistic. And we should, whatever we do, we should know why we're doing what we're doing and not do it ritualistically. And we ourselves should be good examples. You know, I just, one final thing. I'm sorry, I'm talking too long. But one final thing is that how children act is because of the way that their role models act. So the parents are the first and primary role models. If you are Krishna conscious, controlling your anger, you have a loving relationship between the husband and the wife. Prabhupada did say the husband and wife, they actually have a good relationship and they don't argue. Then Lakshmi is in the house. So you get money too from that. So the children will feel shelter. Another point with me and Prabhupada is that I want to be, you know, I don't want to be a copy of Prabhupada, obviously, but I want to be like that. He's my role model when I grow up, which I haven't done yet. But I think like it. When I was young, I was thinking, when I grow up, I want to be like that. You know, so children see role models. Now, you know, if the role model is some drug dealer, that's not good. But if the parents are good Krishna conscious persons and they love each other, and I can't stress enough this love between the devotees. Like when, let's say, referring to my disciples, for example, when they see me having loving relationships with my godbrothers, that really inspires them practically more than what I say. So children have to see these warm, loving, fulfilling. If you're not fulfilled in Krishna consciousness, don't expect your children to want to be Krishna conscious. If you're forcing yourself and not blissful, don't expect them to want to be Krishna conscious. So, all right.
Yes, absolutely. And so it's like, it's another important thing you're saying here, and I love how you connected to Srila Prabhupada, because how we relate with our children in Krishna consciousness is how our children will relate with Srila Prabhupada and with Krishna. And what you said was not to make the children follow things that are away from their social norms and the social customs in the location that they're in. That's what happens, Maharaj, is that then you create two, the child, the poor kid, and I know because I was one of these poor kids, creates two identities where it's like when I'm like this, when I'm in temple, this is how I act. And when I'm outside the temple, this is how I act. And then who am I? And what's being shown is that by the time they hit 18, 20 and onwards, they decide to be like the social customs that they're in, and they accept and decide that they're not going to be that other identity that was in temple.
That's right. Yeah, it's like a schizophrenic situation. Where you have two personalities. It's very interesting, like you and your sister is more like culturally Indian and you are culturally American, which is quite an interesting dynamic that I've observed.
Well, I think it, because both of us, I married an American devotee and she married an Indian, and she lives in India, I live in America, so that might have also played a big role in that.
But I think even in the beginning it was like that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I noticed that even in the beginning, that you were culturally different. So we should be consistent with what our culture is. I mean, I'm you know, culturally, well, of course, I've been a Krishna conscious, trying to be a Krishna conscious for so many years. And, you know, I like the dress. You know, I'm not inconsistent. It's not that I like running around in shorts any better than this. But you know, I'm happy and I'm comfortable with who I am. So the children should be comfortable with who they are. And they can be Krishna conscious without wearing a dhoti. I mean, I hate to say that. But, you know, if they feel more Krishna conscious. The whole point is that connecting the heart with Krishna, and, you know, obviously following the regulated principles is a reason for following the regulated principles. They're not just rules. You know, you've explained the rules, you know, the four regulated principles, as just, you got to do that. You know, it's just, it's a disconnect. It's a disconnect. Why do we say no intoxication? You know, for example, and I can give you an elaborate explanation of why we say no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling, and no meeting. And usually I do that at the time of initiation, rather than just say these are the four regulated principles. There's a reason for it. There's a reason for the 10 offenses on chanting. It's not that these are just rules. And, you know, following rules for rules' sake, I mean, I give an example, for example, and the pujaris will hate me for this. That when you're doing arti, you're supposed to do so many circles around another circle. You know what I'm talking about, doing arti for the deities. So I tried it, and I couldn't think of Krishna while I was doing. I was just thinking of circles and calculation. Now, how many circles am I supposed to do? Or how many circles? So nowadays, I don't care. I just offer arti, and I try to give my heart to Krishna as I'm doing whatever, how many circles around, how many circles. You know, we have all these different ritual things that really disconnect us, because they may connect some people. Okay, I'm not saying everybody has the same psychology, but that's called Niyam Agraha, according to Rupa Goswami. When you're doing things and not able to connect with those things, I mean, what is the... Then Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam, the Bhagavatam says. I mean, what is the use if you're not getting a taste from those things? Or you're not connecting to Krishna? So when I'm doing arti, I'm trying to connect to Krishna. And I'm sorry if I don't do enough circles. I apologize to Nrisimha Kavacha, our deity worship minister, for being a rascal. But I'm trying to be Krishna conscious.
It's again bringing it back to the heart, you know, the heart connection with the Lord, and making sure that every one of our actions are tied in with that essence, not with the externals, and staying away from the externals. So we have 5 minutes left here, and I wanted to end it. Well, we've got one other comment in here that's a really good one. From Mother Priya, from Priya Devi, Krishna Priya Devi Dasi. As a parent, I totally believe that kids shouldn't be forced or imposed on conscious activities. I even go to an extent where I get worried when they pick up Krishna consciousness seriously at a young age. And so then she comes on, how do we give a place for their Krishna consciousness explorations versus our interventions? Like, especially as a parent, in slowing the Krishna conscious growth of the child, or let it take in the right place, and then it doesn't continue the question. I think it's a matter of she's like trying to understand, trying to find out.
Right. I get the question.
Okay.
I understand the question. The point is, let the children be. You know, they're imitating the adults. You know, basically, in the beginning, they may not have the right understanding of what they're doing, but they're, you know, imitating. And if you love someone, you want to imitate them. And I think just let them go. They're not going to be too Krishna conscious. You know, water will seek its own level. And it sounds like your situation, you're a very good role model. And maybe you can be my mother in my next life or something like that. So I can grow up in a nice Krishna conscious home. So I wouldn't worry about it. But just don't force. And, you know, connect to the children for their... The whole point is while they're doing their Krishna conscious activities or after they do it, just connect to them. You know, how do you feel about these activities? You know, you're happy and I want you to be happy. Just, I mean, the main thing is to be loving and interested in their needs. And sometimes you can express your needs, but you don't have a need to control. You have a need for their welfare. Try to understand. You shouldn't say, I have a need for you to sit still. Ooh, you know, oh my God. I'd run out of that classroom as soon as I could. No, my need is for you to be happy in life and to be fulfilled and to have a goal in life. I mean, the other day we had this discussion, how to deal with young people, you know, how to get them into Krishna consciousness. And I said, you simply act as a facilitator. You ask them, what is your goal? What's your values in life? Where do you want to be in 20 years, 30 years from now? You know, you facilitate. I think a guru should be, of course, now I'm going to get myself in trouble. Everyone's going to say, you shouldn't give me instructions anymore. But anyway, I think a guru should be a facilitator of the disciple. Prabhupada actually said, the guru understands the disciple's psychophysical nature and engages them accordingly. Now, that's very interesting. That's one of the guru's duties and the parent's duties. Varnashram. You know, Varnashram means, are you inclined to be a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra? Okay. Not everybody's a Brahmin. So if they're an artist, fine. Wonderful. It's ecstatic. Whatever your nature is, ecstatic. Use it for Krishna. Don't try to put a square peg in a round hole. It's just not going to work. Okay.
You need to say this, Maharaj, again and again. So many of us and so many around us need to hear this. We have Tavi here. She's a mother here in Dallas, a wonderful Vaishnavi, and she's saying thank you for this class. And so we're coming up on ending the class. If you have more questions, how can they contact you?
Let's see, so I don't get overwhelmed with questions.
Well, first, I would recommend that they get your book, right? Realizing Our Empathic Nature Connected to Krishna. And if you have more questions, you can always contact me. I have a website, gopigita.com/parent. There's quite a few resources there on parenting. And any questions, any thoughts you have, and then we can also have Bhikkhu Maharaj come live again on the GBC strategic planning page. And please do also visit the website, gbcspt.com. Share it with others and share this as much as you can so parents all around ISKCON and even anybody who's following any kind of wholesome whole child approach to parenting can learn so much from these tips. So please do hit that share button.
And you can contact me after you've read the book, because otherwise I'll just tell you to read the book. And I'm available. I guess the best way is like Facebook Messenger. My Facebook page is BK Goswami Das. And email, I'm not so much into anymore. But Facebook Messenger, or you can contact Gopi Gita, and she knows how to contact me by WhatsApp. Because usually when I talk to people about these things, I like to talk with a video conversation. Because of tone of voice and body language is very important. You know, typing, you know, can misunderstand so many things. Okay.
So important, like just to know that in this day and age, that as much as possible to talk through video, even that tip is so important. So Krishna is asking, where can we get the book? On Amazon.com. There's a Kindle version. I have it on my phone. It's like really easy to just like check in every now and then as to what he's saying and remind yourself as a parent. And so go ahead and get the book on Amazon.com, either through Kindle or the actual hard copy.
And also, just one final thing. If you want to go to YouTube, Bir Krishna Goswami on YouTube, my YouTube page, there's seminars I've given about this at Gita Nagari, two seminars I gave at Gita Nagari that are available as videos.
Okay, so YouTube as well. So we've given you a ton of resources here, our dear parents, tons of resources here to look into. It's so nice that you're hearing this broadcast. It shows how valuable your children are to you, that you're taking out the time to even hear this. So please spend time in perfecting the art of parenting, and you will have amazing results. Later on, you will feel so empowered by the Supreme Lord that your children are able to take the next generation of the entire world in their hands and serve Srila Prabhupada the way they were meant to be. So thank you so much. Thank you, Marge. It's so good to see you.
Okay, hasta la vista.
It brings me back to our classes with you. Thank you so much.
All right, haribo, haribo.
Everyone.